Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Reckless to Talk, our TTRPG interview show, where we sit down with some of our favorite writers, players, GMs, and streamers to get to know a little bit more about what makes them who they are. I am, as always, your host, GM Nathan. I use he, him pronouns, and I am very frick-frackin' excited to present you with this very good and fun and perhaps even educational episode, as I got to sit with TTRPG creator, charity streamer, adventure writer, and generally cool person, Jess the Human. Jess is probably most known for their regular charity game streams, where they have played with multiple scores of different TTRPG folks and raised multiple thousands of dollars over the last 2 years. I have been lucky enough to be on a few of them, and I have rarely had such pure, uncut fun on stream. They are also a writer of D&D adventures, including A Murder in Moss Bank, which was a murder mystery one-shot featured in Dragon Magazine's online edition, as well as whole TTRPGs like the very wild Uncaging Nicholas, the multiversal Nicholas Cage adventure game that I got to GM and playtest on Jess's stream a little while ago. Also, as of this recording, their latest charity TTRPG bundle, TTRPGs for Palestine, is live on Tiltify, so please find a link to that fundraiser and all of Jess's great work and even more things in the episode description and support their efforts as best you can. In this episode, we get into their personal and professional fundraising passion, the details of putting together a charity event, how to safely get a table of strangers together to play a game for the first time, bullshitting your way through, the benefits of being just a silly little guy, and much more. Jess is a great member of the space, both for their fundraising work and general energy and presence, and I'm just so happy I finally got to sit down and talk with them. As always, if you enjoy this episode, please go check out some of our other Reckless to Talk interviews and maybe even our actual play episodes. We have all kinds of links to the things that Jess and I talk about in the episode in the show notes, including a couple of VODs from past games and the fundraiser bundle. So again, please check that out. And with that, I'll see you next time. Hello, Jess.
Hi.
Hello, we have started. This is the show.
Oh, okay. Hi. What's up?
It has begun. I always, you know, kind of just start screaming at guests. And sometimes I'm not as transparent as I could be about, hello, this is different than the previous screaming where we were just having a nice time talking. This is talking for content time.
This is very guys grocery games of you.
I have a lot of feelings about that, and I'm going to need some time to unpack it. You know, like, they're feelings that I can't identify, but there is a reaction. You know, like, should I feel good about this? Do I feel bad about this? I don't know.
Let's save it for the lightning round.
No, we won't, because I'm not the guest here, Jess. You are the guest, and thank you for being here, as I have said before. But as the guest, would you please take a moment to really set the scene for everybody? And by that, I mean, could you tell our dear listeners who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. Howdy, my friends. My name is Jess. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And you can find me on most places on the internet at Jess the Human. That is Jess with just one S. Shucks, what do I do? That is such an interesting question.
Can you just like boil your like human existence into like a quippy kind of sales pitch real quick? If that's no pressure.
For sure. Okay. You need to know three things about me. I like to pick up heavy weights and put them down again. Mm-hmm. I like to send good morning tweets every morning and make people feel emotional about it sometimes. And I am a charity content creator.
Perfect. Yeah. There you have it. That's the kind of the Jess package, all in one. And I can certainly vouch for, I think in a way, all three of them. I don't think I've physically seen you pick up heavy things, but I've seen, you know, kind of like lots of documentation around you having or about to pick up heavy things. So I think that counts.
Yes. I am a little vain. a little vain in my posting, but you know what? Who cares?
I would say you are proud of the hard work that you've done and the very large things that you are able to move.
You know what? I like the way you framed this.
That's what this is for. This is actually just a large, you know, kind of like PR spin campaign conversation, as opposed to an in-depth interview. So, you will be charged afterwards. We'll talk about rates later, but you know, I think you will find my praises are very fair.
It's hugs and kisses, right? Because that's about what I've got.
Anyway, so you know, Jess, we you know. You are someone who, since we've gotten into the space, I think we must have started somewhere around the same time, give or take at least. But you have been churning stuff out all the time since I have been aware of you, and maybe more stuff now than ever. I haven't crunched the numbers, but that feels correct. And doing more charity stuff and doing more content stuff and game writing and fun little YouTube shorts and all kinds of things. But you know, Jess, we don't start talking about the breadth and quality of your work. You know, we don't go into the resume right away. No. We got to get to the core of whomst this person who moves heavy objects and also plays games for fun and charity is. We got to get to that nougaty center and start at the beginning, you know? So Jess, what was your kind of entry into tabletop role-playing games and or, you know, kind of like nerdery, I guess, if that is a different or more pertinent question?
Absolutely. Okay. Let me take you back to the seventh grade.
Amazing. Everyone's favorite time of life.
Oh, yeah, totally. I love puberty and hating everything. 10 out of 10 experience. Wish I could live it again. Mm-hmm. No. I was in like a homeroom. What does that even mean? The room that you spend your most time at? I don't know. But I was in some sort of a homeroom. And I remember walking up to Dan and Nick. And they were like hunched over their little desks and they were like giggling and like writing things on pieces of paper. And I was like, you guys, what are you doing?
And these are teen boys. This could be anything that they're doing.
Right. Right. I was a wrestler back then. So like quite literally, these boys could have been doing anything.
Right.
What they are doing, they tell me, is we're playing D&D. You could be an elf if you want. And I say, that's great. Have fun. And I walk away.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would say that you didn't have the smoothest on-ramp, I guess, is what I'll say in defense of seventh grade Jess.
Yeah, I did not, unfortunately. But my dad, like the next year, introduced me to the Fable series and I fell in love with that. I remember the first weekend that I played at his house, I just did not go to bed. I just stayed up eating Twizzlers and playing Fable, and I was frick-frackin' obsessed. I still am. I am patiently waiting for Fable 4. It will happen, or I will riot and yeet myself into the sun. But that's neither here nor there. The way I got introduced to TTRPGs is a funny story. Let's see. It must have been like mid-2019. My partner and I lived right by a Target and we loved loitering. That was such a fun activity.
Yep. So from one millennial to another. Yeah, obviously. Loitering, particularly at Targets, for sure.
Yes. And something that I always make sure we do, regardless of if it's supposed to be a quick in and out trip, is we always go to the game section. Now we always go to the video game section as well, because they have the frick-frackin' giant Pokemon plushes. And I'm waiting to catch a Gengar in the wild. I refuse to buy it online. I'm going to catch it at Target. But anyway, we are loitering. And we've done this probably once a week for the past couple weeks. And I keep seeing Dungeons and Dragons in the game section. And I'm like, this sounds kind of fun. You know, like what if we pestered someone into playing with us?
And did you have like cultural context at this point beyond seventh graders saying you can be an elf? Like, did you know ish what Dungeons and Dragons was, or just like, I don't know, it's a fantasy game thing. Cool. I have heard of it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a fantasy game thing. I've heard of it. He'd played Skyrim and all of those games at that point. And like I've played fantasy video games, but it had always started and ended there. And so I pester him and he's like, oh yeah, let's think about it. I pester him again the next week and he's like, yeah, okay, if you can find someone, goddamn, we'll play. And so I was playing rugby at the time and I was just kind of, you know, gently poking people to see where the interest was. And my friend Jackie said, you know, I've played Pathfinder before, but I've never played D&D, but I'll be the dungeon master. We have a rugby camping trip coming up. Do you want to play then? And I was like, ooh, playing D&D in the wilderness? Ooh. That sounds super fun.
Man, you went from like 0 to 60. Like I feel like a lot of people online who are making TTRPG stuff are all like, we're going to rent a cabin with all of our friends and we're just going to play games for like 3 days. And that's just, you didn't even have to GM it. You had someone be like, I'll do it. I'll take the reins. Let's go to a cabin. You got like the primo experience, at least on face value, immediately.
We weren't even in a cabin. We were pitching tents.
Well, I don't want that one, actually. I want running water still, but, you know, to each their own.
There was a pond. It was actually really cool because, or not a pond, there was a river. So we had like just amazing background music. It was so cool. We were all so invested. We started with Mines of Phandelver. And I just remember Jackie saying, okay, everybody, and there's like 8 people playing, mind you. This is wild that her first experience was DMing for 8 people. She says, okay, you guys are all like on your little cart leading your way to wherever you're going. And we're all just like, hi. Because we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know what to do. You know, the last time I had like role played was Frick Frackin' Cops and Robbers when I was in kindergarten or whatever, you know, like,
yeah.
I didn't know what to do. But the less sober we got sitting around the campfire, utilizing one set of dice for the 9 people.
Sure. It's streamlined gameplay. Yep.
Oh my
quick
God.
Turns. I'm sure combat was resolved quickly and without any confusion.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We did not think too far ahead. We had to create our own character sheets on pieces of paper that did not have the printing on it. It was a lot of fun. Honestly, it was so much fun. Okay. I remember drawing my little character, Jadriel, and I made the character sheet around her drawing. And it was just, it was such a fun experience. When we got back after the camping trip, because we took 80 years to get through this thing, we finished it up back home and it was just, it was so much fun. And then the pandemic happened and we were definitely an in-person group. The screen to screen thing didn't work for us because we knew each other in real life and everything was exhausting at that point in time. And it unfortunately fizzled out, but I will always have a soft spot for that campaign and that character who rolled a nat 20 on her first roll and made a goblin shit its pants.
again, all of this is just making sense as like a faded occurrence, you know, of like, well, of course now Jess streams TTRPGs because just listen to this origin story. It is everything that possibly could have gone right did. And so how can you not chase that high for the rest of your life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that was July of 2019 because it was over 4th of July weekend. I ended up tearing my ACL in a rugby game not 2 weeks later. Ow. So like I just fully was like, I cannot move from this couch. Y'all are coming over. We are playing. After like a month or so, I was like, do you mind if I take the DM reins? Ooh. Like, I want to do a one shot. And I found something on DM's Guild. I really loved it. I think it was a murder mystery, actually. I'd have to go back and check.
Yeah, I was
that is actually what got me started on wanting to write my own, because I had so much fun running it for them and catching them in their little mistakes on like, oh, you're not supposed to be doing magic right now. You're going to get arrested. And then being like, whoop. Just kidding. We didn't do that. It was just, it was a perfect entry into a, I would say perfect hobby, but you know,
it's complicated.
There's ups and downs. Yeah, exactly.
So what was like, even kind of beyond that initial, we're browsing in Target curiosity. And I would imagine just this nice, just kind of friend exercise and just getting to hang out and be goofuses with friends. But what took your enjoyment of gaming and tabletop stuff from that? Oh, this is just a nice, fun thing I'm doing with my friends and we're all just having a great time out in the woods or whatever into, oh, no, this makes me want to make stuff. This makes me want to engage with it in all these different ways and keep playing it and play with different people. You know, what are the bits of the hobby that really kind of speak to you and make you still do it after, you know, 4 to 5 years later?
What a great question you have asked me, Nathan. I converted an old Twitter that I used to like get points for checking into a gym to like get free junk from the gym.
I say this in the most earnest way I can. I love that. I love that that is the case for you.
Yeah, this Twitter has really gone full circle from being just gym to being just D&D to be now in like a mix of all of the interests that I have. But I converted that at the end of 2019 because one of my party members had started watching Critical Role. And so I was like, okay, what is Critical Role? And I got onto D&D Twitter, which led me to TTRPG Twitter. And I was like, oh my God, what do you mean? There are more D&Ds than D&D? Which is, that is literally how I explain TTRPGs to people that like don't know what it is.
I think that's I am sure that there would be a lot of people who'd be very angry at what you just said, but that I think that's very reasonable and astute.
It's the easiest entryway to get people to understand that Thirsty Sword Lesbians is another game that you can play. And it's so much easier. I have forgotten the original question that you have asked, but I think it was something along the lines of what made you stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of what, both in the hobby itself, you know, just kind of like, oh, this is something I enjoy doing, not just a fun activity that we did once or twice, but like what part of your soul did it scratch? And then, you know, we can kind of from there of, yeah, how did you get more and more involved in the actual scene? So it's kind of a two-parter.
I have an incredibly addictive personality. my hyperfixations go hard. And this happens to be the longest running hyperfixation that I have had in my life. And I am incredibly thankful for that because I've made so many great friends and great connections and have played in so many great games. But that, I think, is the biggest factor. When I was like, oh, there are people that like this just the amount that I like it.
Oh, yes.
And want to talk about it all the time, just like me. Sign me up. So I think that was probably the first entry point into me being like, oh, yes, I am converting this Twitter. I am just the DM, I think, was the first one that I had. And it's changed a lot because I'm not going to lie, publicly DMing gives me a lot of anxiety right here in the chest.
Not your thing.
Not very my reasonable thing. So I've had a lot of little handle changes over the years, but just the human has stuck.
It's a good catch-all.
Thank you. Yeah. I've had it for longer than I've been on D&D Twitter. I converted my like regular person life handle over to that one.
Yep.
And then I think what really got me to stick around again is like the folks that I've met in the community. I've become really good friends with a lot of people, and that's really, really cool. And that mm-hmm. makes me want to continue investing myself and my time into other people, because friendship is neat, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I think when we'll get into it, but that definitely strikes very true with the kind of stuff that you make. Is it is very much about like, cool, let's just get as many different cool people together as humanly possible, doing as many cool things as humanly possible. So at what point, and I always find this interesting because the answer is always different for different people. You are someone who has played games with friends, with babbling rivers and brooks and home games over ACLs and whatnot, and are starting to get involved in kind of the internet space of fandoms, of just kind of tabletop and talking about it and whatever. But to go from that to what you're doing now is a big leap. That's very, very different than being a tabletop enjoyer or someone who does it privately versus someone who's like, I'm going to do this all the time. When did that kernel kind of start to form for you, and why?
Absolutely. 2020 was a cool year.
Yep.
Where there were, okay, not really, but there, there were some good things that came out of 2020. And that was me seeing two of my interests collide, one being tabletop role-playing games and one being charities. I saw other folks doing TTRPG charity streams and I was like, mm-hmm. What? It gets better? And so, as you know, in my personal life and professional life, I guess I am a professional fundraiser. It's something that I went to school with. It's something that I love doing. And so marrying my interests was just a no-brainer. I thought that that was absolutely incredible. I think maybe I was on like one charity stream in 2020. I was just a little shy guy.
We were all but babes back then.
Right? The TTRPG space was wild, wild west. Nobody knew what they were doing on Twitter. I feel like we still don't know what we're doing on Twitter.
I was going to say, I'd argue it's still pretty wild westy. maybe just as much, differently wild westy, but you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with you there. And so, yeah, I dabbled, you know, I started watching and participating as an audience member, got myself invited to a stream or two. And then in 2021, I was like, wait, I've been streaming some video games. And when I first started streaming, I was streaming like Pokemon Snap and old Mario games and things that I could play on emulators, because I love just going back to a time when things were simple.
Especially, you know? In, I don't know, the year 2020. That seems like maybe I could see that being connected, not to put words in your mouth, but just something that occurred to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so around 2021, I was like, wait, if I can stream video games, I bet that I could stream a TTRPG. And so I put a call out to my friends and followers, and I had folks that were like, I'll help you. And it happened. It was fun. I played Ronaldo McDonaldo, which is based on, you guessed it, Ronald McDonald.
And for those who aren't familiar with the Just the Human channel experience, I would say that's a good encapsulation of kind of a lot of the energy, not all of the energy, but like a lot of the energy. As someone who has been a member of a few of those streams, that sounds about right.
Incredible. I still look at that Hero Forge every once in a while. I remember him fondly. He was such a fun character to play. But anyway, I had a great time doing that stream. I think I maybe did the person that helped like run and produce my stream for my birthday asked if I would do one for her birthday later that year. And after that, I was like, I can do this. I can do this on my own. I don't have to have other people helping me. Now let's keep in mind that I was just a wee babe that had no idea what I was doing.
I mean, right. There has to be a level of just blind ignorance. I think everyone is on that. Most everyone's on that level of just like, well, sure. I don't know. What else am I doing? I can do it. Mm-hmm. Little did we know.
And we stumbled and tripped and fell our way through. And it is hard to watch some of those streams due to all of the difficulties that I had and how crappy the layouts were. But you know what? You have got to start somewhere. And starting is the hardest part, I think, for a lot of people. So I'm just happy that I started because doing this brings me a lot of joy. And joy is something that I think that I need and that a lot of other people need in this hellscape that we are currently living in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair just encapsulation. I'm curious. So were you a theatery kind of person or any, you know, kind of was there performance as, you know, as part of your background? Or were you just, hey, I like fantasy and I like playing games and doing goof em ups?
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Agenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words, "Trust no one, Tyr." Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A Foul Light Shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger.
Hey everyone, Jonathan here with the midroll. If you're looking for the hottest frog memes around, join the Reckless Attack community on Discord. You can find a link to it in the show notes of our latest episodes or on our website, recklessattack.com. Want to support the show? Tell a friend or check out our Patreon at patreon.com/recklessattack, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback show as well as our new Reckless the Snack series, where we eat snacks, hang out, and just talk about whatever's on our mind. Thanks so much for listening to us, and we hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
Yeah, pretty much goof 'em ups. In the seventh grade, I was the the assistant for the teacher for choir. And I got to join in on some of the songs, even though I wasn't enrolled in choir during one of their performances. And I was like, this is kind of cool. And then in the eighth grade, I went to show choir camp and I did a solo. And I was like, okay, being in front of a crowd isn't that bad. And then I never did anything ever again with singing. I'm an awful singer.
I am too.
I don't know why I tried, but you know what? We did it. We persevered and now we're here. I will say though, that I just like bullshitting. It's fun.
Hell yeah.
It's so fun. Just making things up. I've always enjoyed that. And now I get to utilize it for real with other people.
Yeah. And something that's so wild to me for a lot of creators who, you know, kind of do stuff the way that you do it is I have the nice privilege of being part of a whole podcast, and it is not my face. It is the podcast logo. It is the whole show. It is kind of the same consistent thing over and over. And for you, it is, hello, my name is Jess. and I'm all of the things. And to, you know, to make the leap to I'm an individual and I not only can do this, but I'm going to like, that's, I'm the brand. I'm the handle. I'm the person putting everything together. I'm producing everything. Early on, was that something you were interested in? Did you kind of cherish the opportunity to, you know, just kind of do a thing all by yourself? Or was that something that you discovered was fun or discovered was, oh my God, this is a lot of work, but I'm locked in now. You know, kind of what was your attitude about being a one person, you know, kind of situation?
Whew, another great question, Nathan. Gosh, I don't know yet. I don't know. But I will say that Nick over at Scry Society, he was running his own one shots, his own charitable one shots on his own page and also GMing them at the same time. Wild. I cannot imagine trying to do all of that and keep a cohesive story together. I saw that Jorge TTRP GIFs. I can speak.
TTRPG is a part of every intro of this show, and I always have to like slow down and re-enunciate it. So I understand.
Mm-hmm. I saw that they were, you know, doing it by himself. And I was like, if these two can do it, so can I. And I mean, there are so many other, you know, charity content creators that are also doing it by themselves that I'm not naming, but like, I was like, damn, if these folks can do it, so can I. And I remember it must have been July of 2022 is when I did Rolling for Reproductive Rights. That's when, you know, abortion rights were under attack mm-hmm. in the United States. And I did a charity weekend where I hosted six games. And I was like, if I could do six games, and I think I put that together in like 2 or 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I was like, if I can do that, I can do this monthly. And that is when I started doing it monthly. I think it was either September or October of that year, because I was like, I need at least 2 moments to breathe that entire weekend. But it was so cool. It was so cool having so many people come together to donate their time, talents, and efforts, and then to have so many people tune in and to support an amazing cause. And like, it made my heart sing so loud. It was so awesome. And again, that's when I was like, oh yeah, I do this now. I've had a couple, you know, monthly charity streams that have gotten canceled because something happens at the last minute. And that's okay. We're all real humans with real people lives, and we can always pretend to be funny little guys. You've heard me say this. So we can always, you know, raise money for charity at a different time. The charities will always be there, unfortunately. That's something that I've come to hate in my career. They're like never going to go away.
Yep.
But it is what it is. And it's a cool way to give back to a community that has given me so many opportunities. So I just blit at you, but that's where we ended up, baby.
Everyone always worries that they just blab too much and say nonsense. And I promise you, don't worry about it. It's all good.
Right on. Cool.
So I have a bunch of kind of philosophical questions and design questions about your format, just because it's so interesting and a lot of work and just very cool. But I think it's worth talking a little bit first, especially for people, really even for people who are familiar with the stuff that you do and how often you do it and how much you do. Do you have a sense of how many streams you've done, of how much you've raised, how many different charities you've supported, how many different cast members you've had across all of those things? Because the answer is a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. So I think for TTRPG streams specifically, on Tiltify, I've raised about $20,000.
Wow.
And by I mean the community has helped me.
Yes.
Because I literally would not be able to do it without, one, people donating, two, people coming on to the stream to like donate their time and also their audience, because this is just one person that can only get so many people to show up to one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a community effort. I just happen to be the one wrangling the community at that time. I made a sheet last year because I was curious about how many people I worked with in 2023. And there were 85 different creators.
Amazing.
Over like maybe 20 streams. But this is also including some, I do participate in some non-charity streams on my channel. And it's always a funny thing during that session zero, because I look directly at the people on Zoom or Microsoft Teams or wherever we're meeting. And I'm like, I'm just producing and playing. I'm not also like managing everything else. Like, you guys get my full attention. This is weird.
Isn't that neat? What an experience.
I know. We just had a JJK stream on Tuesday. And I just got to like fully participate and be my evil little guy. And it was so much fun. But yes, around like 85 creators, some I had doubled up. I try not to ask the same people to be in like more than three or four streams in the same year. I'm breaking that rule this year because my pal Dennis, the OKest DM, he's the creator of Sagas. He has very, very sillily agreed to running a bunch of anime games on my channel. And I'm just like, you messed up, bud, because I'm going to just keep asking. And at one point, you've got to say no, because you're a busy guy, too.
I'm not going to say no for you. You have to do it.
Yep. But oh my God, it's so much fun. So yes, to answer your initial question, I think I've already actually answered it. Around $20,000 on Tiltify, around 85 creators, around 20 games.
That's incredible. So was that always kind of the vision? Obviously, you've had a ton of great support. You've had a ton of incredible amounts of creators, very small creators that I had never heard of, who I fell in love with, to huge, gigantic creators in the space. But yeah, was that the kind of original vision and incarnation? Was monthly thing, different casts, different charities, all that kind of stuff? Like, did it pretty much come fully formed, air quotes, from the start?
Yes and no. That is my favorite way to answer a question, besides what a great question you have asked.
I appreciate both of them. So,
definitely when I decided that I wanted to start doing it monthly, I put a call out to say, hey, if this is something that I would do, would you support me? Who would want to DM? Mm-hmm. Who would want to play?
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many amazing folks that, like you said, like I had never heard of. And I started checking out their work, and that led me to other people's work. And so this sounds a little bit weird and creepy-ish, but like I have a running list of people that I want to play with because I respect their work and their craft. And they're just cool people. And so part of it is not wanting to double up because I want to be able to play with cool people. But then also part of me is like, what if we asked so-and-so again? They were so much fun and we totally had such a cool dynamic.
Yep. That's why we don't have any repeat talk guests, is because like, well, yes, I would talk to this person four times in a row. I would be like, cool. Hey, Jess, let's do an interview. What's your stream this month? Let's just talk about it. But there's just a lot of cool people.
So many cool people. And this is not to bring the mood down, but sometimes I'm like, damn, like there are so many cool people participating in this that like I will never get to meet.
Yeah, big time.
That I will never know that they're out there like kicking ass in this craft. And that makes me sad.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But anyway, let's bring that mood back up. Next question.
This doesn't need to be. This is pointedly not like I try to have fun. You know, I want it to be a fun experience, but it is very explicitly not a good vibes only situation, we talk about, you know, real life things such as, boy, there's a lot of people out there and we don't know them all. Yep. Seems reasonable.
Yeah.
So how do you, so we talked a little bit about, you know, you've kind of put out feelers of like, hey, who wants to do the thing? And I also know that you occasionally come up with more kind of themed episodes that you either reach out to people or people tag people in to be like, oh, well, if you're doing this, you should talk to this person. How do you go about checking the vibes of people? You know, just I always find it interesting. I do some of it for Reckless to Talk, but also I mostly just get to focus on people that I know. And I don't know that I know 85 people well enough to invite on Reckless to Talk. So what does that process look like? And how do you feel confident enough in kind of sharing your platform with them, and kind of associating yourself, associating with everyone who's playing this game, associating in some ways the charity with this huge array of different, usually very quality people that you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you got to do a little bit of detective work. What people put on their Twitter usually aligns with who they are as a person. And you can usually get a pretty good vibe check that way. I also like to take a peek at like other things that they've done. I've had folks on that haven't been on charity streams before, and that's gives me a little bit of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Not saying that I won't do that again in the future, but like, you are like putting yourself out there as like, I'm co-signing this person for this period of time, and then yes, also the VOD afterwards. And so I just like to check people out in a not weird way.
No, yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, they've got to pass the vibe check for sure before I'll reach out and say, hey, really would like to work with you on this. In some instances, very few, because usually I have a pretty good like mindset of, okay, these are the people that I want to ask. If so-and-so doesn't work out, I'd also like to ask this person. But sometimes I'll take recommendations from the cast that I've started working with.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. And so it kind of just forms like that. Something that I really try to do now, I've had maybe, I can really only think of like one stream where some people came prepared for a fun me game, and yeah, one or two people came for a serious game, and it was just, oh, okay. And so that's, you know, it's something we do, a vibe check in, depending on what kind of game we're playing. We didn't do a vibe check for the Definitely Frogs or Definitely Wizards Not Frogs game, because that is a very silly game in itself, and I would not have a fun time making that a serious game. But it's good to do a vibe check during session zero to be like, okay, what kind of vibe do we want this to be? And I think in every game that you've played with me, it's a funny vibe, because that's the type of person that I am. I am not trying to pause the game. I just like to fiddle with Legos sometimes since they're on my desk. But yeah, I don't know. I've been asked to participate in some serious games, and I can be a serious person. But why would I want to be when I can be a funny little guy?
Well, especially because I think you've done a couple of like multi-parters, if I'm remembering correctly, like a part one, part two. But you're mostly just doing 2-hour streams, right? I think, and it's hard to be dramatic in 2 hours. You know, it's much easier to just be goofy guys in 2 hours. So it is both fun and practical.
Yep, absolutely. I've back in the day, there was the God Squad, which got turned into Clerical Errors. But yes. The BBEG scheduling god said no. And we had like a I would say it was mostly goofy, but it had its serious moments. And then there was a different stream that I was a part of that I'll just not speak about because F those guys. And it was set in the Dread Realms. And I was the light of that party. And everyone else was super serious. And I was like, I can be serious sometimes, but boy, wouldn't it just be fun if we had some laughter in this, because yeah. This is depressing.
Yeah, I get that. So, and you also do a lot of stuff rotating through different systems, kind of, as well as different casts. You have done D&D, certainly, but you've already talked about Thirsty Sword Lesbians and Monster of the Week and all your own tabletop role-playing game that you created, Uncaging Nicholas, which is... Yes, dear listener, exactly what you hope that it is about. So how do you, first of all, are you someone who enjoys playing a lot of different kinds of games, both for streaming purposes or kind of for yourself?
I will answer that with a yes and no.
Hell yeah. Got another one. Add it to the tally.
There are definitely systems that I prefer to play.
Sure.
There are some crunchier systems that have a lot of math where I'm like, I'm too gay for quick math. I don't want to do this. Please, God, no. But yeah, I mean, the reason that it rotates is because typically when I reach out to a potential game master, I try to work around their schedule, one, to get it scheduled. I typically give like a range of dates and say, hey, what times, dates would work best for you? Once we get that covered, I'll say, hey, whatever system you think is going to get people interested in coming to the stream and excited to donate works mm-hmm. with me. Here are some systems that I like. Sometimes a GM will choose one of those systems. Sometimes they'll be like, what if we played XYZ? And I'll be like, you got to teach me, but I'm down. There are some instances where I will approach a GM with a particular game, specifically you with Uncaging Nicholas. I wanted to play test, and there was just a group of five people that immediately said, I am in, I want to be Nicolas Cage. And so that is how we chose the system. But really, I'm pretty loosey-goosey. As long as folks will be excited about it, I'm excited to play.
Are you good at learning different games? I'm not. I'm very bad, specifically reading rule sets. It's in one ear, out the other. Playing, I get it. But are you someone who is good at that? Or does it depend on the system or blah, blah, blah?
Well, first of all, I wish I knew how to read. That would be incredibly helpful.
That at least closes some avenues for learning, but not all of them.
That's a good question. I can usually stumble my way through a game. Like if I don't have a ton of time because XYZ is happening in my life, I can typically figure it out on the fly.
Especially for 2 hours, you know,
okay, for a stream. It's 2 to 3.
Two to three hours. Yes, I didn't mean to minimize.
4 hour one. Come on.
Didn't mean to minimize your streaming. But I, as someone who's also streamed, I've also been able to be like, yes, and now I roll the same dice I rolled last time. Question mark? Yes, I know the rules. Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah, you just bullshit your way through it. Mm-hmm. It's just a game. It is literally made up. It is an avenue for having fun.
Definitely.
What did they say in Pirates of the Caribbean? It's the rules are more like guidelines. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's just a tool. We don't have to use them. So to go back, yeah, I like learning new systems. But also, I'm very much like a learn by doing type of person.
Totally.
And I'm going to be totally honest with you, Nathan. I could play systems that don't have any rules at all. Actually, yeah, something totally. That I love doing with my partner, Brandon, we call it impromptu D&D. Well, okay, we used to call it. Now we call it Brian Molt Lava. just so embarrassing.
Say that again. Just to make sure the mic catches it.
Brian Moltlava. That is the character that my partner plays. And my character's name is Danny Maliathan. And those are the only two characters that we don't, like, I won't play Brian Moltlava and he won't play Danny Maliathan, but we play all of the other characters interchangeably.
Amazing.
There's Victor with all the K's, Kronkenstein. What do we mean by that? Karen, Carl, Katie, you know, all of those. That's a giant dragon. And there's just a lot of different little characters that we just will jump into and have a fun little impromptu game of yes anding. And I could do that all day. I don't need to roll. I don't need to do anything.
I'm obsessed with this.
We've done combat in it. And it's just, it was in a wrestling ring. It was so much fun. And we do whatever we want because again, it's just make 'em ups.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Moltlava-ing.
So you have a GM that you want to play with, right? And they have a system, they have a date, it's all locked in. You also have this list of people that, hey, they seem like cool folks. I like the stuff they're doing, good reputation, they've been recommended to other people, whatever kind of the various processes are. How do you go about slotting in the humans to the same table? Is it just what's the next five people on the list? Or is it more assuming that there isn't kind of like a specific tie, you kind of hook to get a specific people in for usually some quality meme energy. But do you put particular care into putting the individual tables together? And as far as personalities and creators and whatever.
So a little yes, a little no.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that the answer that you like, but different. So after the game that I previously mentioned, I did start putting like, oh, I've seen this person mostly do serious games. Let's hold off on that. Or I'll say, hey, this is not going to be a serious game. Like, this is for fun. We are raising charity. Totally. We're going to have shits and giggles here. Are you cool with that? And if they're not, that's cool. We can circle back on a time that I might decide to be serious.
I'll let you know when that definitely happens in the near future for sure.
Near being 10 to 20 years, potentially. Who knows? But yeah, I think the vibe checks, checking out, you know, their online personalities and seeing if they'll mesh. But also just like kind of picking the people that I think would be cool. There's not too much more to go into that. I do say
totally.
That I try to always have, you know, 50% BIPOC folks on all of my streams. I think diversity is incredibly important when you are performing for an audience. And that's something that I'm committed to. There are some games where it's more, there are some games where it is slightly less. And that is how the cookie crumbled. But it's something that I'm committed to when I put a table together, as well as when I join someone else's table, which doesn't happen very often. I had the realization like, late 2023 that people might not invite me to their things if it's not charity related, because that is the brand that I have dug myself into. And I'm like, I will join your game if it's charity.
And you're so busy, you know, like you're busy. You always have like, again, there's always a stream cooking. There's always, you always have like what it feels like a gamut of you've played with everybody. So yeah, they don't need my invite. Not that this is Nathan speaking as Nathan, but it's you're an intimidating presence, Jess, obviously.
Because of the muscles, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the
muscles and breadth of work. So knowing that, you know, kind of you've kind of agreed on the tone, you've agreed on the game, that sort of thing. And something that I know I have always really appreciated going on your streams and playing and assume you do this all the time, but is the session zero stuff. And I would imagine, at least for me, I didn't know almost any of the people that I was playing with, or at least a good percentage of the people that I was playing with, maybe one or two, not including you. And the session zeros were always very helpful and very useful just to establish tone, establish boundaries, you know, kind of the do's and don'ts, especially for some people who hadn't maybe streamed tabletop stuff before. So can you just talk a little bit about your approach to session zeros, why you feel they're important, especially for a game like yours, where it's, we have one shot, we don't know each other, we're going live and let's do it.
In my TTRPG how-to series that I have started and not continued since my first two, but I will get back
really,
to it.
Two really good videos, which will be linked to in the description, how to do a tabletop role-playing game. I think just charity stream. And then the other one was
how to host your first TTRPG stream.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to make sure, because you were very explicit at the beginning of, I'm assuming you already know how to go live on Twitch, and then my brain overthought. what else did they say that they're not talking about? Okay, oh god, so we're caught up now. But they're great videos.
Thank you so much, I appreciate that. The thing that I was saying is that in my how-to series, as it relates to TTRPG streams, I am creating one specifically on how to run a successful session zero. So the things that I think are really important for a session zero are, and this may sound super silly, but just asking everyone to introduce themselves at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And like, I always model it myself, like, hi, I'm Jess. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. Typically, I'll tell folks that I'm really excited to play with them because, oops, surprise, I wouldn't have invited you to play if I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And then I'll like say a fun fact. Sometimes fun facts throw people off. I know in the last session zero that we were on together, we all did what our favorite dinosaur was. And then that just kind of morphed into like Jurassic
Park. We talked about Jurassic Park for like 15 minutes, I think.
Honestly, it was pretty cool. And I ended up watching Jurassic Park pretty soon after
Hell
that.
Yeah.
And that's just like to break the ice. I mean, it's incredibly awkward going into a stream to like be a silly guy with someone that you've like never talked to as like a real life human being.
Yes.
And so I think that that's a really good starting point. Doing aligns and veils before is something that I always strive for. Depending on how much time we have until the stream, you know, we can do a lines and veils document after the session zero, or if people haven't filled it out, but some have, we can go through it now and then again on the day of. But I always, always, always say, I have invited you to be on this stream because I think that you are a wonderful person. And I don't think that any of you would do any of this, but I like to physically say it out loud. We are not going to do homophobia, transphobia, sexism, racism, sexual assault, anything that would otherwise make someone go, why are we doing that? And I feel like I might have like memorized that now. I've said it so many times.
It like flashed into my brain as like a lived experience from previous ones. So that,
yes,
I would not be surprised.
Hell yeah. And so just like setting the tone of, these are things that are expected of you as a player. Please don't do that, because nobody is going to want to like play with you again, because that's gross. If the lines and veils document has been filled out, I do like to verbally read it out loud. I know that some people like digest things when they visibly read them with their eyes. Some people are like, okay, I gotta hear it. So I just like to share it on the screen and show everyone and read it at the same time, while also providing a link so they can, you know, go back to it at a later time. I always like to tell folks, and this is something that I think I started kind of like mid last year. I don't remember why. No, actually, you know what? It was my birthday charity stream. There was someone that had to leave in the middle of a game, and he was like so apologetic, and I was like, dog, you are a real life person with real life responsibilities. It is okay And after that, I have started telling people up front, like, I'm not going to be mad at you. No one on the stream is going to be mad at you if you have to jump out of the game before it starts, if it's in the middle. Like, all I have to do is go to Canva and mess around with the layout. So, like, it takes so little time to do it. Like, your comfort and your health and mental well-being, that is all so much more important than being a silly little guy. So it's okay. And so I just like to tell people that, like, life is more important than the fake life that we have on screen together. After that, I typically will ask what kind of rating, if we were being in a movie, what kind of rating would this be? Mm-hmm. Do we want to lean more towards PG-13, towards R? Don't really want to get into like NC-17 or X or any of that. But as we talked about before we started recording, I always let folks know cursing is cool. Cursing is great.
It's actually sick.
But let's curse with a purpose. Let's not do the mother fuck song. Because that's just like, I don't know. It's very middle school. It's very, Jess walks up to Dan and to Nick and asks, what are you doing? You know, it's, do we really need it? Plus, most of the streams are for charity. So like, let's be respectful of like,
totally,
us representing this charity as absolutely well. After doing the rating is usually about the time that I hand it over to the GM to kind of give us a primer on what the adventure is going to be about, you know, what kind of characters we should be creating, you know, if it's D&D, what level. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, all the little fiddly bits.
Yeah. And then really just like kind of having ties to the characters. I think it's always so important to, unless you're establishing, hey, we have never met each other and we are just being smashed up together for the next 3 hours. I think it's good to like have little bits and pieces of my character knows this character because of XYZ and vice versa all throughout the party. So when we get to the game day, it feels more cohesive and we can just immediately jump in instead of saying, hi, my character's name is Ronaldo McDonaldo and he likes to supersize himself with the enlarge spell. You know, it just makes things smoother for game day.
Yep. Yeah. And that is something I also kind of wanted to talk about because you really specialize and crush the kind of short one shot, you know, kind of experiences. And especially when it's, again, players who haven't played together before, characters who have not been on screen together before and therefore don't have history. And you have to explain like the whole plot of a thing and resolve it and action and goof 'em ups and tangents and all the stuff that every GM knows always takes 18 times longer than you think it will because players are slow as fuck. So is there anything that you have learned over doing this about what makes for a good 2 to 3 hour experience? Like the kind of tips that certainly someone who is interested in kind of maybe streaming a game or whatever, or just kind of any GM who's looking to really hit on, okay, I want to get things done in 2 to 3 hours in this session. Jess, tell me what to do.
Ooh. Okay, I always like to tell the GM that if you need to gently railroad us so we end on time, because I play with a lot of East Coasters and I'm a West Coaster myself, I like to be done at 8 because my bedtime is 9:30. Their bedtime is minimum when we're ending 11:30. Which just sounds disgusting because I should be honk shoo me-ing at that time. So getting buy-in, I think, from players to have that gentle nudging and prodding is really important. I think having a chat set up on the side so everyone can communicate with each other non-verbally, so it, you know, the audience doesn't know what's going on behind the scenes, I think is incredibly important, especially depending on, you know, if you're going to be using a physical X card, like with your hands, or if you want to be able to like message someone and say, this is not where I want this episode to go. I did not know that this was an X for me until right now. We need to stop immediately. So I think those are two really big things. And I really will go back and say just having pre-established connections, and it could be as simple as the last time this group was together, we accidentally destroyed a city. It was not our fault. And then, and it can be just literally as simple as that. And then everyone just yes ands throughout the adventure to establish that cohesion of the group in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's good advice for anyone. I want to take a little bit of a step back to kind of the guest portion of things. You've had a lot of really great folks on, again, big, small creators, medium creators, all the in-betweens. But notably, you've had a lot of very popular people in the space and big names who have been on your stream, and ones that, not that I know who you talk to all the time, but seems like we're just kind of a like, hey, it's me, your boy, Jess, do you want to come play? Or someone tagged you in the tweet that this was, and do you want to do it? Which is, I know, certainly, even talking to people for Reckless to Talk, whom I know and like, it is nerve-wracking. And the few times I've had other people that I've reached out to has also been intense. And you have done it a good number of times. So have you gotten, you know, kind of just like starstruck, I guess, kind of, first of all, of just like, holy shit, this person is talking to me about the game. And what's your just approach to reaching out to people who have a lot going on, I guess?
I don't think I get really starstruck with some of the bigger folks mm-hmm. that I've worked with. I will say, though, that my partner, Brandon, sometimes, like, when we watch D20, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I've worked with them. And he'll be like, what the fuck? Are you serious? And I'll be like, what's up? And so I think that he gets a little starstruck on my behalf.
Yeah, sure.
Because, like, to him, those are just people on a TV that he's totally. Like, never, you know, going to interact with.
Right. They're not humans. They're like the product on the television, not actual humans that I can slip into the DMs of to do a charity one shot.
Exactly. And that's a funny thing that you say, because I think the thing that I've always told myself is the person that I'm reaching out to is just a human, just like myself. Like,
yeah.
Yes, they might have lots and lots of followers on Twitter, but like at the end of the day, they are just looking at their little black mirror, just like I am, typing with their little thumbs. Yeah, yeah. Sure. I'll be on this. This date works for me. This game sounds fun. Okay, cool. And I think that I've just like always grounded myself in that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hell, if I was like Becca Godsley, like DMing for T-Pain, maybe at that point I would be like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair line.
Yeah. But as we have established, I do not like to publicly DM. So I'm not going to have that problem to worry about.
Won't be me. Won't be me. So I think the last kind of question that I had just around the kind of player and game experience, I guess, portion of what you do. I know for me, every time that I play with different people, I learn something or see something differently or just am kind of rejuvenated, at least when it's a good experience. There are obviously bad experiences that are the opposite of all those things. But I can't imagine having played with 85 different people and, you know, 20-ish different GMs and all that kind of stuff, what sort of an education, I guess, that would be, at least for me. So what has, your experience been in terms of getting all that exposure to different play styles, to different even session zero approaches and thoughts and all that? You know, have you changed or grown as a creator just from that aspect alone? And if so, how?
Yeah. Yes. Yes is the answer.
Not and no.
So Actually, one of the things that I do, where, you know, I ask folks to connect themselves to other characters, I got from a game. It was UO Publishing's Under the Harvest Moon. We were doing a one shot for them. And the DM said, okay, everybody, I'm going to ask, you know, Jess a question and then David a question and then other Jess a question. 2S Jess. So sorry, Jess Pinley, your other Jess today. But he like went through and asked us, you know, okay, answer this question about the group, if it's about a specific person or if it's about the entire party. And I was like, holy shit, we're a cohesive group before the game has started. This is amazing. This is actually the one where we did destroy a town. We accidentally killed it with lots of flowers. And now that party hates flowers. It was also the first time I played Mothman as a character. And it was just very chef's kiss. But that's something that has stuck with me that I'm like, I love this. I love it so much. Because I don't think that that was something that I was doing in my personal streams that I was producing at the time. And it has made games go a lot smoother since then.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else have I learned? I've picked up just like little things over the years from people. Danica, I think it's Sweet Danica. I hope that's her tag name, because if it's not, I'm just calling her Sweet Danica, I guess. But I remember when she played with me in my birthday one shot way back when. She had a really cool way of describing like what she was doing with her magic as her character was casting it. And I was like, that's something that I can do?
Yeah, what? Totally.
And it was just like, there have been so many different people that have just like given me eye-opening experiences on this is something that you can do in TTRPGs that you just haven't thought of yet. Because like, I never watched CR. I never watched D20 a lot. So like, I am living within my own brain and the games that I have participated in and the other games that I have watched. And it's just so cool being able to be like, ooh, I'm going to snatch that Yoink. From you and I'm going to snatch that from you. And we're just going to take, and mold it into the play style that I have as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go to what I think is something that we've talked a lot about, but haven't talked as directly about, which is the charity angle, which sounds so very cynical when I put it that way. That's not the intent. You get what I mean. As you've said, you do it as part of your kind of everyday life. It is something that is a passion for you, clearly. And so I guess just first, why is that something that you have dedicated so much time and energy and focus and work towards? Again, both as a TTRPG person, but also just as a person. You know, why is that something that is important to you?
Oh, philosophical. I mean, helping others and giving back to others makes me feel good. Like, mm-hmm. I wish I could say that it's all altruistic, but like it makes me have joy in my heart.
Yeah.
And so it's something to be proud of. It's something to bring me joy. It's something to connect me to others and give back to the world that can be a really shitty and dark place. Like I've got my little flashlight and it's my charity streams and my charity content that I do. So I thought that was going to be a longer answer, but it's not. That's it. That's the tweet. Send.
I think, and again, you've talked about this and you've made again, a very good video about it, which I would really encourage everyone to watch. I think it's like 7 minutes, something along those lines, that goes into kind of some of your best practices around having a charity stream. And without, you know, kind of just regurgitating the 7 minute video, but is there anything that is kind of core for you about how to do it right? Air quotes, right. You know, just kind of like a philosophy or a mission or something that kind of drives how you plan everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a really important part of any charity stream is allowing the audience to be a part of the game with their donations, whether that's helping the party or hindering the party, them being there in that live moment and being able to say, ha ha ha, my $50 donation is going to give the red dragon an extra fire blast attack. You know, I don't know. And maybe that red dragon isn't in D&D. Don't come for me. I'm not a DM all the time. So yep.
I get what you mean.
That's what I have 100%. To say about that. And we all know that I don't know how to read. So it's not like I've read the DM guide anyway. So anyway, I think having like at minimum three different donation levels that can get the audience to be able to interact with the game. A low barrier entry one, like $10, a mid level 25, and then 50 to 100, I think is pretty decent. And then obviously, the more expensive the donation, the easier it is for that audience member to help or hinder the party. I think if you can specialize the rewards into the particular game that you're playing, I think that really helps a lot.
Definitely.
I did an Oops All Flumps game, and by I did, I mean Dork Lord Canada. He was the GM, and they did an amazing job of creating a wild flump table. And we rolled on that so many times. It was so much fun. And we just pooted around the entire game and raised funds for Palestine Children's Relief Fund. We did an Oops All Mimics game, and we did something similar where it was a wild mimic shape table. And it was just fun, you know, fun ways to engage your audience and get them to want to donate more. I think that also incorporating like, oh, hey, if we reach our, let's say, $2,000 goal, so-and-so on the stream will do so-and-so thing, yep. Whether that's a part two or OKSDM, I know, took a pie in the face on my first stream that I was on with him, which happened to be Moth Boy that I was playing. I love playing moth people. Invite me to your game. If you don't take away anything else from this
right.
90 minutes to the longer, I don't know how long this is going to be, but it is getting pretty up there right now. Invite me to your game so I can play a moth person, please. Thank you.
Get there. Do it.
Yeah.
I think the last kind of main question that I have is, you have been doing this for, again, two or three years now, and have been doing it consistently. And like you said, you've raised $20,000 in total. You kind of, thanks to kind of your organization and, of course, the work of a lot of other people and the donations of people in the community. Is that something that you're able to look back on and kind of feel the scope of? Because that's a lot of games, and that's a lot of charities, and that's a lot of money, including some really big itch bundles you've put together, you know, all kinds of stuff. And you've made a tangible, real impact, and you've played with so many people. And is that something that you, I don't know, can like have the space to hold, I guess, at this point? Or are you too in it?
Interesting question. I will say that some of it has not been entirely healthy.
What? You're saying that someone who started creating tabletop role-playing game content in sometime in the 2020s maybe has had a touch and go relationship with self-worth, creative drive, output, input, etc. What? That's wow, dang.
I will say that some of the content that I have created was during a very depressed time in my life where I needed a light.
Sure.
And there I was with my little flashlight shining lights on charity streaming.
Yep.
I will say, though, it is really cool to go to my YouTube and just like look at my videos and like the VODs and all of the things that I've been able to participate. Something that's really important for me personally is making sure that I get a VOD up pretty quickly, that I, you know, tag all of the creators on YouTube, but then also put it out on Twitter with a nice little clip. And that's a way for me to say, you know, like, hey, I know that you probably want to have a, you know, not necessarily a demo reel. What am I trying to say? A thing that houses all of your videos that you, oh my God, words.
I'm not being helpful. I'm trying very hard to be helpful. Clips.
I don't know, like a link tree that has all of your VODs that you've been like a guest player in. I know that I have a playlist up on YouTube of the times that folks have made VODs and, you know, allowed me to put that in there. So it's something that I like to do for other folks because they might not have that opportunity to showcase what they've done to someone else if they're trying to work with them and whatnot. So it's fun going back and looking at those. It's like a nice trip down memory lane of, oh my God, do you remember that time that you and Dwayne The Rock Johnson were wrestling out back and all of the different things? Yeah, you thought that I wouldn't remember that. That was such a fun game. It was such a fun game. Yes, I don't know. It's fun to go back and look at all of the past work that I've done. It's not as fun when I'm like, wow, your work now is so much better, but it also is fun.
Yeah.
In like seeing how much my work has gotten better, where it's, you know, the production quality, not messing up on my stream deck and having a who's that Pokemon play in the middle of a game.
I think everyone's been there.
I don't know. It's just, it's so cool. And I mean, it makes sense that as time goes on, you get better at what you do, but it's so cool to be able to have like tangible evidence of like, wow, it does get better. So I don't know if I answered your question, but you know, I like the charity streams and I like the TTRPGs and I like that they're together.
Absolutely. What's your hopes and dreams? Is the goal just keep doing the thing?
Dog, I would love to get paid for what I do.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I mean,
wouldn't we all?
Yep. Your words to, I don't know, God's ears or whatever the saying is.
Yeah.
Well, Jess, I have had a lot of fun. I could just keep chatting with you about all kinds of nonsense, truly indefinitely. You know, I help you and your partner be a third NPC in your make 'em up games.
I think you mean Brian Motloving. Come on.
Yep, that's the one that I definitely was going to remember off the top of my head. Very, very immediately memorable, well branded game. But, you know, as much fun as we're having now, as much as we're doing giggles and goofs, unfortunately, that time has passed. And it's with a heavy heart and maybe a fond farewell that I have to tell you that it is now time for the Reckless Talk lightning round.
Can I ask a question before this starts?
I'll talk to the judges.
Secondary question. Ooh, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned judges because I want to circle back to Guy's Grocery Games. How do we feel about you starting the podcast just like Guy Fieri?
I am going to need my therapy appointment is Tuesday, so I'll circle back to you then and let you know.
Excellent. Thank you.
I will not be adding that to the lightning round because, Jess, the Reckless Talk lightning round is the same set of questions for every single guest that we have had in the exact same order. There are no wrong answers to this other than like lying, just because that's not fun. It can be a short one word answer. It can be a long winded. That reminds me of the time, blah, blah, blah. Or it can be, you know, I don't have a good answer for that. I will, regardless, give a respectful pause, ensure that you are done, and move on to the next one. Jess, are you ready for the lightning round?
Maybe. Yes and no.
Great. That's exactly the answer. That is truly the answer, and you've now reached enlightenment, but still have to go through the hellish landscape of the questions. Question one. Is your glass half full or half empty?
My glass is literally empty right now because it does not have water in it.
Because you've consumed all of the water during Correct. The interview.
Yes.
Question two. What excites you creatively, spiritually, and or emotionally?
French fries.
What does not excite you creatively, spiritually, and or emotionally?
Not having French fries.
What is your favorite sound?
Ooh, ooh.
What sound do you hate?
Farts that sound wet. It's okay. You can laugh.
No, Jess, that's not the format. Is I don't comment on your things, even though it's very funny and true.
Well, laughing isn't commenting.
Isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it, Jess?
I don't think so.
That's not one of the questions, but isn't it?
No.
Jess, what's your favorite word?
Serendipitous.
Good one.
Thank you, Hot Rod, that taught me that word.
What is your least favorite word?
Okay, hear me out. I do not like the word initiative because it takes me 5 to 7 tries to spell it correctly. Mm-hmm. Even though you would think as a person who writes D&D adventures that I would know how to spell it. I don't. Newsflash. I don't know how to read. I don't know how to spell. I'm just barely scraping by.
Or math. We established that too.
I hate math. You know what I like doing? I like talking. And that's it. And French fries. Talking in French fries.
What tabletop role-playing game or D&D monster or, you know, antagonist have you not faced or run that you would love to?
I think it would be so fun. And maybe it's just because I have Mothman on the brain, but to like go up against Mothman.
Hell yeah.
Also kind of terrifying. Also super fun and sexy.
As someone who has run Mothman on our very own podcast, all of those things were true. What is your favorite adventure of all time? And now this can be a tabletop role-playing game adventure that you ran, that you wrote, that you saw someone else run. It could be 1999's The Mummy, whatever the question, whatever the answer is for you.
Oh, okay. Gut reaction was Adventure Time before you started saying adventure that you have written. Murder in Moss Bank. It is my best-selling, I don't know what medal it is. It doesn't matter, on DM's Guild. It's so much fun. I love it. It's what like really got me into wanting to continue writing D&D adventures and why I've written a couple more murder mysteries since then.
And I will take a pause from the lightning round to remind all of our dear listeners that all of the links to things like the games that Jess has made or what have you will all be available in the description, even though we ran out of time to talk about all the cool stuff.
Ooh,
anyway,
maybe 10 to 20 years from now when you've gone through all of the other cool people.
Every single tabletop role-playing game person be like, all right, Jess, I guess it's your time again. What or who is your favorite tabletop role-playing game character of all time? And again, similarly, it can be your character. It can be an NPC. It could be one from a game you've played in. Someone else's character could be from an episode of a show that you watched.
Fuck, this one is so hard. Mm-hmm. I like making puns into my character names. And so immediately I think of Eminemitar, who I played in my Oops All Gym Bros game that I'm getting ready to play in again. A different Jim Bros game, but then I'm like, okay, that's a one-time character. What about Jay, who I play in a Vampire the Masquerade Frick Frackin' podcast that is about to die or kill her sire? And I don't know. I don't know. That's my answer. I don't know. Maybe it's Eminemitar. God damn it. Eminemitar? And maybe it's Jay. Who knows? Not me.
Who knows? Last question. Jess, what gives you hope?
I think people's willingness to help others when asked and give when asked, whether it's financially, their time, their talents, or even like something that they know how to make. It's really, really cool knowing so many people that are willing to say, you know what? I could be drinking beer on a Tuesday at 5 p.m., but instead, I'm going to hop on this game, play a silly little game with you, and raise some funds for charity. And that makes me hopeful.
Jess?
Nathan?
Congratulations. Not only have you made it barely by the skin of your teeth, have you made it through the Reckless Talk lightning round, but you've made it through the entirety of Reckless Talk. Thank you so much for your time and talent. I appreciate you very much. As a reward, could you please remind everyone who you have been and continue to be, where to find you, how to support you, all the good things.
Do you like the live action Grinch with Jim Carrey?
Yes. I want so badly to watch it every year, and my wife hates it. And so I have to either watch it alone or just not watch it and be a little bit worse that particular Christmas.
I'm so sorry. Divorce does exist.
I know. Believe me.
Wow. I'm so sorry. Okay. Well, you said reward, and that reminds me of Jim Carrey saying, I heard there would be an award. they rhyme, and that's where we got there. Anyway, yep. I'm Jess. I'm a silly little guy, and you can invite me to any of your things so I can just be a silly little guy with you.
Jess is excellent at being a silly guy.
Thank you. My pronouns are they, them, there, and you can find me on all most places on the internet, not Threads, at Jess the Human. That is Jess with one S. If you go to, well, actually, I was about to lie to y'all. I'm so sorry. I don't want to be a liar. Usually I have a pinned tweet up with all the places that you can find me. But right now I'm putting together a charity bundle of TTRPGs, and that takes precedent over me and all my silly little guy links. So Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky. I think that's it.
Most of the places.
Yeah, most of the places. Find me there. Find me square. I don't know.
And by the time this interview has dropped, there has already been a week of birthday stream festivities, which should all be uploaded to your various platform of choice. And go watch it as thanks for Jess for their birthday. And also because, you know, they have successfully gotten through Reckless Talk and they deserve an extra little bump.
And also as a birthday present to me, you can go to the Tiltify for the TTRPGs for Palestine via Tiltify. I know it's a weird name.
Link in the bio,
link all over Twitter, because there, when this gets released, there will be 5 more days where you can purchase a bundle of TTRPGs that the community has donated to raise funds for Palestine Children's Relief Fund. I don't know how many there are going to be.
Dozens already, as of recording of this.
There are currently 48, and it just opened this morning at 10 a.m. So I'm imagining there will be at least 200 or so TTRPGs for you to get your grubby little hands on, and I don't know, maybe play with me. Who knows?
I don't know. Who's to say? And will there be Jess games in the bundle? Can you commit to, will there be a copy of Uncaging Nicholas?
There is a copy of Uncaging Nicholas in the bundle.
What more do you need?
Correct, my good friend. French fries. Thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone. That's our ending.
Hell yeah.